If you prefer manual, time-consuming processes, then this message isn't for you. But if you want to slash per loan cost and boost productivity, then exploring Indicom's Genius Suite is your next step. Integrate Genius into your operations or pair Genius with Indicom's expert mortgage services for proven ROI. Learn how to get Genius at work by visiting Indicom.com.
Hi, Housing News listeners. This is Alcina Lloyd, and I'm the producer of this weekly podcast, which is a proud member of the Industry Syndicate. Today, you'll be listening to episode 5 of season 4 of the Housing News podcast. In today's episode, Nima Wetlake joins the Housing News podcast to discuss the housing market's real estate ecosystem, as well as Open Door's S4 filing, which now values the company at $4.8 billion. During the interview, Wetlake touches on his recent blog that examines Open Door's business practices, its progress to date, and its future prospects. He also discusses why so many companies in the housing space are now choosing to go public. But before we listen, here's a brief word from our sponsor.
Now more than ever, homeowners and borrowers of the future need to understand impacts and options during times of financial hardship. Freddie Mac has made home possible for 50 years and is committed to providing assistance and clarity to the housing market. Through All for Home SM efforts, Freddie Mac Single Family is leading the future of housing through insights, education, mortgage, and business solutions. Learn more about resources to help you and the clients you serve at sf.freddiemac.com/affordable lending.
Thank you for listening, and here's the 5th episode of season 4 of the Housing News Podcast.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Sarah Wheeler, Editor-in-Chief at HousingWire, with the next installment of our 4th season of the Housing News Podcast. I'm really excited to talk to Nima Wetlake, a principal at Tomfest Ventures, about the rash of IPOs we're seeing in the mortgage space. Nima, welcome to the Housing News Podcast.
Thanks for having me.
So over the last month, we've seen a rash of mortgage companies going public. Rocket Companies kicked it off, followed by UWM, Calibra Home Loans, Finance of America, United Wholesale Mortgage, AmeriHome Loans, and Guild, and that's not even all of them. So those are all lenders, but we also had Open Door, an iBuyer, announce on September 15th that it was going public. You wrote a great blog piece on that, diving into their S4, and we really wanted to get your perspective on the overall trend of going public and on Open Door in particular. But first, we'd like to get to know a bit about our guests. So let's start with how you got into what you do now. Can you tell us a little bit about your background?
Yeah, absolutely. So Tomvest is a San Francisco-based venture capital fund. We invest in companies across all stages, but our sweet spot is really Series A through Series C. And we spend a lot of time in the fintech, insurtech, and of course, the real estate tech verticals from an investing standpoint. Prior to Tomvest, I spent several years in management consulting, and then also related to our investing efforts in real estate. Personally, have grew up in a family of mom and pop, literally mom and pop real estate investors, and spent time understanding the trials and tribulations of the category, some of the inefficiencies associated with it, and it's really cool to come full circle and spend time with entrepreneurs looking to use software technology to improve the process of buying, renting, managing homes across the U.S.
Thanks for sharing that. Interesting always to see how people got into our space and what really motivates them. When you guys were looking, so your blog can be found on tomvest.com, great, on Open Door. What led you to want to dive into Open Door specifically?
Yeah, good question. It's a fascinating company. There's been so much in venture capital flowing into real estate technology in the last several years, and Open Door is one of the largest, if not the largest, venture backed company in the category, and it's really an ambitious business model where it's a mix of technology, of course, to scale home buying efforts without scaling the number of folks required to enable those transactions. So there is this fundamental technology platform there, but there's also, it's also an atypical venture investment in a lot of ways, right? It's there. There's a a big balance sheet that's required in order to enable transactions. You know, that there are teams distributed across the US in order to facilitate the transactions. And it's required a hefty amount of capital into the core business in order to get to really impressive scale. So it's always been a fascinating company for me. And I think the fact that they announced their intentions to go public, it's a very, I would describe it as a hallmark moment for the entire real estate tech industry.
I like that, the hallmark moment.
Yeah.
That's interesting. You know, as you mentioned, they're the nation's largest iBuyer, and they're concentrated, like most of the others, in bedroom communities in the Southwest and the West. Tell us a little bit about their business model. How is it that they're going to make money?
Yep. So it's, you know, on its surface, it's a fairly simple model, right? They offer a very quick way to sell your home. You can go to the Open Door website, type in your address, fill out some questions around the property characteristics, and within a day receive an all cash offer for your home. And if you choose to accept that, you can close on the date of your choice, and the Open Door team will facilitate that entire process on your behalf. Very simple. I think simplicity is one of the goals of the Open Door team, right? But behind the scenes, there's a lot going on, right? There's a fairly sophisticated data science team that's responsible for determining at which price they're willing to purchase your home for. There's a centralized ops team that's coordinating a vast network of subcontractors, repair teams, agent teams that are responsible for post-transaction making the property ready for sale, and then selling the property in the open market at some premium to what they purchased it for. So lots going on in order to generate revenue for the business, but at its surface, it's the idea is that, hey, let's take this home selling process that has historically been expensive, stress-inducing, time-consuming, and build a internet version of it that is elegant and simple.
Boy, that is the nut that everyone's trying to crack for sure.
Definitely.
You know, we're used to tech companies going public, even though they're not profitable and might not be profitable for years. And that's the case here. You know, why are investors interested in Open Door? What promise do they see there that makes them say, hey, they're not profitable yet, but here's why we're interested?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. And you know, I would point to the growth story of the business, at least pre-2020. It's a company that was growing, you know, north of 150% year over year, which is rare in an asset class like real estate, right? They were able to show, you know, quote unquote Silicon Valley style growth in a market that, you know, where sub 10% growth is fairly common if you're looking at the public REITs, right? And so I think that's the first interesting component of the business. To your point, there is a long journey ahead before they reach profitability. But they make an argument in the investor presentation in S4 that they distributed that there is this clear path to achieving that profitability. And we'll get into this more, I'm sure. But part of that is attaching ancillary services like title, escrow, like home insurance, like mortgage to the transaction that they're helping facilitate in order to increase revenue per transaction. And then also spending more time serving the buyer side of the equation as well, where there's revenue to be had and then where they might not need to take ownership of a property in order to facilitate a transaction, which is just a more cost-effective business model ultimately.
I mean, that's a lot going on. You can understand why there's so much interest there. Let's pull back a little bit and talk about the way that they went public, which is this SPAC, which to me, it seems like, wow, this year has just seen so many of those. But is that true? Or is that just because in my space, I'm not used to seeing so much of that happen? Tell us a little bit about that model of going public.
Yeah, so SPACs are an interesting phenomenon in 2020. You know, I think at the beginning of the pandemic, I personally would not have predicted we'd be in this sort of IPO reverse mortgage frenzy that we're in now. But if you look at the volume of SPACs through 2020, even through the first half of 2020, it surpassed the total amount raised for SPACs in 2019. And I'm sure by the end of 2020, it'll be, you know, north of 2x, 3x the total capital raised. And, you know, very, very good question around why is that the case? And it's something that we're spending time within Tomvest trying to understand as well. Part of it, I would say, is a byproduct of the macroeconomic environment that we're in. There's a ton of capital in the system. And so, you know, if you think about the traditional IPO process, it was companies looking for liquidity. The SPAC model kind of flips that on its head, right? It's liquidity, which are, you know, the set of dozens of SPAC sponsors who have raised capital, looking for companies, looking for interesting high growth assets with a path to profitability that that they can help facilitate in the taking public process. So, you know, I think it's just a byproduct of just how much capital is in the system today. The fact that, you know, in a lot of ways, the stock market has been, you know, from the venture perspective, the IPO window has been closed for several years. You only see really large tech unicorns going public. And so I think a lot of folks view this as a path to getting some of the, you know, the long, not the long tail, but the mid tail of venture backed technology companies to the public market, so that investors can get access to those businesses.
So the fact that, you know, Opendoor is going with social capital as the kind of blank check company that they're merging with, is there anything particular that you see that's why social capital is, you know, does this fit into their particular model more? Why are they interested in Opendoor?
Yeah, you know, I think Chamath is who leads social capital thinks from a macro perspective, and you know, as part of the investor presentation that Social Capital shared when this announcement was made, Chamath and his team shared a set of macro tailwinds that they believe will benefit the Opendoor business over the long term. You know, A being the increased movement of folks from urban high cost markets like the Bay Area to you know, more affordable markets like Phoenix, where Opendoor has a really strong presence. You know, access to low cost of capital, which Opendoor is benefiting from, is, you know, kind of the low interest rate environment that we're in now is something that the social capital team talked about as well. So, you know, I think while the company doesn't maybe exhibit the classic profitability characteristics that you know, at least historically we've seen in the public markets, what makes it an interesting asset from Chamath's perspective, in my estimation, is that there's this big macro story where 5, 10, 15 years from now, you can, you know, in his view, you can draw a line to Opendoor being a massive company on the scale of Amazon, you know, which is a company that was referenced in that investor presentation.
Oh, really interesting. You know, so in your blog, you talk about those, you know, five reasons to believe why it is that they might be interested in and what the case is for it. One of them has to do with exactly what you just said, which is scale. Can you expand on that a little bit? I mean, we're in a low mortgage rate environment, which is, you know, has kickstarted this huge origination boom this year. But, you know, what about 2 years from now? So can you talk a little bit about scale and why they think it's going to be so big?
Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, part of what I tried to spend time on in the post is the concept of economies of scale in a business like Open Doors. And, you know, we've seen this play out across not just venture-backed tech companies, but across the set of other public real estate companies like Invitation Homes in the single family rental space. You know, they've demonstrated that you can scale up a massive home buying operation without hiring a massive team to do so. So, you know, in the Invitation Homes case, they have, you know, more than 80,000 homes in their portfolio, all single family homes, you know, they operate at a scale that wasn't really possible a decade ago, pre some of the benefits we've seen around mobile phones and the connectivity associated with it. And I think the same dynamics play out in Open Doors case as well. A, they've been able to scale their home buying apparatus to, you know, nearly 20,000 homes in 2019. Without having a massive team to do that. B, they've used their scale to negotiate discounts with suppliers like for hardwood flooring, tile, paint, et cetera. They have much better pricing than you or I do as shoppers at Home Depot, right? And then a third, they have a large network of subcontractors who they've negotiated rates with because they have scale and they can guarantee a steady stream of business to, you know, plumbers in Phoenix or other subs in that network that they've built. So what ends up happening is with that scale, you can operate at a level of efficiency that effectively blocks out other folks in the market, be they other venture-backed iBuyers or other real estate investors. You know, they can get to a point where, you know, they simply are more efficient at the repair process, at the pricing process. Their cost of capital is much, much lower compared to a real estate investor that often has to rely on hard money to finance a short-term purchase. So those are the benefits I tried to allude to. And I think part of the big story is that if you want a business like this to succeed at scale and reach profitability, those economies of scale need to continue bearing fruit over the next several years.
I think the interesting thing to me about that is that when I think about tech investment or a fintech company, I don't think of such hands-on things. You know, I don't think of like plumbers and people laying tile or putting in a hardwood floor. I mean, it feels like those things are so much less definable than many of the fintech things that we talk about, right? So interesting that the blank check company that Social Capital was interested in and saw that and wanted it and saw the possibility of that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think in the venture world, in the software world, we're so used to zero marginal costs or near zero marginal costs, right? It's, you know, using AWS or Google Cloud, we can create infinitely scalable products and services built in software. And so we don't really think about, you know, gross margin or economies of scale in the same way. But that's, I think in a sense, that's what makes part of the Open Door story interesting, is that, you know, can you get to a place where you can actually generate interesting gross margins because you've reached such a massive scale and lowered your per unit costs accordingly? It's definitely more challenging than a lot of traditional software businesses, but I think there's they see the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow as well there.
Yeah, that's really interesting. It's like, this isn't particularly an engineering problem. So a lot of other things going on here that they need to solve. So one of the things that you talk about in the article and that you alluded to a little bit ago was the ancillary services is key to their future profitability. And we see in the mortgage space that this is where everyone is constantly looking for disruption? Like, who is it that's coming in today? Not like, oh, we're starting a lending business, but what part of this ecosystem are they picking off that they are then going to be able to dominate the lending business or the servicing business that we can't even conceive of today? I think that that's what everyone is looking for. So especially here, there's so many things, especially if Chamath sees it as, you know, being so big and all those things coming back to them, you know, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, that's key. So what do you see as being the most important of those ancillary services?
Yeah, good question. You know, if you think about to your point, you know, every real estate technology company we've spent time with at Tomvest that's at the point of the transaction paints this ancillary revenue stream picture in terms of how they get to scale and how they become profitable with said scale. You know, and we've seen this play out pretty effectively at companies like Rocket Mortgage. If you look through the S-1 there, you know, they have the mortgage servicing business that they've built into their mortgage origination business, that they have title and escrow, they have real estate agent referral network, they have auto and personal loans now as well, in addition to home loans. And they've demonstrated that at scale they can, you know, that can contribute actually pretty meaningful revenue to the business. And the Opendoor story is no different. Already today, title and escrow is a big component of their, you know, ancillary revenue. I believe in their mature markets, it's north of 80% attach rate there. They speak a lot about home loans, and I think this is probably where they see the biggest opportunity to generate incremental revenue, on a per unit basis. I would say that's probably the biggest short-term opportunity for them. You know, in addition to home loans, they talk about moving services, some repair and maintenance services. But you know, I think home loans are interesting in the fact that they have the ability to, you know, effectively bundle the home sale because they own the homes with some sort of financing component. And so in the real estate brokerage world, attach rates for mortgage are typically in the, you know, single digits or low teens. Whereas in the home building world, so think the Lennars of the world, the attach rates for their in-house lender is upwards of 75%. And so, you know, I think with Opendoor, you'll see attach rates for mortgage somewhere between the two, but because they are, you know, they share characteristics with the home builder and the fact that they own all the inventory they're selling, they're not simply facilitating a transaction between two parties. They can do more to dictate or to price competitively the mortgage when it's bundled with a home that's in their inventory. So there's lots of interesting things they can do there, and so I'm excited to see how that business evolves. Today it's still very small, and they didn't even break it out in the S-4 around how much revenue that contributes to the total business.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see, and also just. Really, that's the key to me is how they're going to be able to do that and when they're going to be able to do that. But interesting for our audience, that part is super interesting. The other part is the whole idea of iBuying. You know, right now they're playing nice with agents, and when we've suggested, oh, iBuying is a threat to agents, to real estate agents, you know. Not just Opendoor, but the other ones too, will be like, no, we you know, we can play nice and we can be part of their repertoire, and they can, you know, they can use us to get the best different offers for their clients. And that's certainly true today. But one of the things that you bring up in your piece is the margin expansion by disintermediating agents. And, mm-hmm. and clearly, you know, if you're looking at this and this is the piece that agents are the most, you know, worried about. From your perspective, is this something that is coming sooner rather than later, or how does that fit into this whole picture?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. You know, I think Opendoor has always had a bit of a frenemy co-opetition sort of relationship with agents in their respective markets. They realize that agents are an important source of facilitating transactions in many cases, but they also see the agent commissions as a really lucrative source of margin for Opendoor. And I think their vision is to facilitate the both sides of the transaction ultimately. And they can use that traditional agent commission and pass it back to either buyers or sellers in order to incent them to operate or to transact simply with Opendoor and without an agent on either side. So I do think that they'll start competing more directly. You know, Opendoor is in I believe they're in the process of hiring in-house agents in some of their more mature markets that are salaried. So it'll look more like the Redfin model than the Compass model. But ultimately, I think you'll see all of these companies converge into something that looks more or less the same, where, you know, we're seeing this with Zillow and Redfin already. They have an iBuying component. Opendoor is hiring agents in-house. So they're all going to be these hybrid brokerage, iBuyer, transaction engines for the housing market. With kind of a menu of offerings depending on your specific situation as a buyer or seller of a home.
Yeah, you mentioned that hiring of agents in house and that to me, that was definitely one of the things that perked our ears up. We wrote about that as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, and one of the things about this year, obviously, it's been just a very unusual year, unusual for this kind of investment. And, who would have thought at the beginning of COVID that this would even happen? And one of the tailwinds for Opendoor is the fact that they did pause their iBuying this year for a couple months or maybe just 1 month, but, have been slow to resume in some other markets. So, what does that look like? Why now for Social Capital to say, yeah, this is a great time to do this, even though this has been a very unusual time and some of those things, remain a problem. We don't know what the next even year looks like.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. We spent the last several minutes talking about some of the tailwinds associated with the business. But at the same time, we're in the midst of COVID. And if you look at their financial forecast for 2020, they expect a 47% year-over-year decline from 2019, from in terms of revenue, and so COVID definitely had an impact on the business. I think they did a nice job in the investor presentation, spinning it as a net positive. But it does speak to the fact that during any period of disruption, the pandemic is obviously a very unique period of disruption, but maybe even a more vanilla recessionary environment. What sort of impact will that have on the Opendoor business? Because they're holders of home inventory at such a massive scale. And I think you brought up this point earlier. What happens when interest rates rise? Their cost of capital goes up. That could also dampen demand from home buyers. What happens in a scenario when they expect home prices to depreciate? Do they stop buying in the similar way they did during this COVID period we're in? And so I think similar to the set of mortgage companies that are going public, while things are really good right now, just given the low interest rate environment we're in and the supply constrained nature of the housing market generally, they're like more Rocket Mortgage, for instance, it isn't trading at a incredible premium to it isn't trading at the same level as Zillow's or Redfin's of the world, because I think Wall Street investors recognize that there isn't this consistent up and to the right story that their success is highly dependent on mortgage rates and mortgage rates will go up eventually, although TBD when that happens.
That's a great point, and really leads into my last question, which is really about the valuation and how they come up with that. You know, they announced at a $4.8 billion, but the shares have increased since then. So, and you're right, which imply an enterprise value of about $12 billion. So, you know, how are they, how did they come to that? What are some of the factors that they're looking at when it's hard to compare them really to anybody else?
Yeah. It's the, you know, the $12 billion question. We spent a little bit of time looking at comps, public comps. And, you know, you could probably argue that Zillow and Redfin are the most relevant comps because they have this, this iBuying component to them. And you know, at the, at today's or the, at the enterprise value, that was implied based on the SPAC share price of, which was $12 billion. It's definitely trading at a healthy premium to both Zillow and Redfin. At the IPO price, which was, an enterprise value of $4.8 billion, it was trading kind of in line with the, with those companies. And so, you know, I think it's, there are interesting dynamics around SPACs. I think a lot of it is about the quality of the sponsor and, you know, their ability to tell a convincing story around the long-term growth prospects for whichever business they're sponsoring. And, you know, for now, the, you know, Opendoor is a Dart, it's a new public company, right? They haven't had to report quarterly filings because they just went public. And so I think there's a lot of enthusiasm around the business. And that's, I think that's why you've seen, you know, more than a 2x increase in the price per share of the social capital SPAC since the announcement was made.
And, you know, there's so much more we could go into. We're about out of time for today, but Nima, I want to say thank you so much for sharing your insights with us. And we would love to have you back as this story develops, not just with this, but if we see other SPACs come through and kind of what we're seeing next year as things change. Really appreciate that and have really appreciated the discussion.
Yeah, likewise. Thanks so much for taking the time to chat today and would love to talk more. I'm sure we'll see plenty of additional real estate related SPACs in the near future. So happy to chat more about those when the time comes.
Nima, thank you so much for sitting down with us at Housing News and sharing this insight on a trend that we're sure to see more of. And thanks to our listeners. Have a great day.
Thank you for listening to the Housing News Podcast. Please don't forget to give us feedback and rate us on iTunes. Also, make sure to check out HousingWire's latest podcast, The Daily Download, which is a daily wrap of HousingWire's hottest stories, now available on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and more. See you next week.